Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, Blog Talk Radio. This is Russ Johnson, and we are talking about UFOs.
So what you're telling me is that UFOs, unidentified flying objects, are real.
Bill, I think we're beyond that already. The government has already stated for the record that they're real. I'm not telling you that. The United States government is telling you that.
Luis Elizondo spent 20 years running military intelligence operations worldwide in Afghanistan, the Middle East, and Guantanamo. He hadn't given UFOs a second thought until 2008. That's when he was asked to join something at the Pentagon called the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, or ATIP.
The mission of ATIP was quite simple. It was to collect and analyze information involving anomalous aerial vehicles. What I guess in the vernacular, you call them UFOs. We call them UAPs.
Okay, UAPs, that's a new name. You know, this for that 60-minute thing to come out not too long ago and the Pentagon releasing that information, it has been up for discussion among a lot of people because I think up until that point, the official government of the United States in any form or fashion did not even deal with UFOs. I think except if we were to go back to Project Blue Book. And let me talk to Jillian. Hi, good afternoon. Thank you very much for joining us once again. And what I want to do is hit some highlights of this thing. You remember Project Blue Book, Jay Honig, and
yes,
all those people, right?
I do. Yeah, I do. I remember that. But you know, that man was just saying, it just crossed my mind because, you know, I don't have television, so I don't know what the government's announcing via public news because I don't watch television. But it does occur to me, that man just mentioned something about 2008. But I remember back in 1990 or 91, yeah, 1990, it might have been 91. I was asked to speak to a group of people at the United Nations in New York. They were pretty much heads of departments. They have a parapsychology area, a department there that looks at all kinds of unusual things. And after I'd been there, they contacted me and asked me, would I answer a series of questions, which were basically about how the United Nations should deal with extraterrestrials on first contact. So this was way back in 1990 or 91. So, I mean, I didn't do anything with it, but that was under discussion at the UN that far back. So this has been something that's been going on a long, long time at governmental levels, senior government levels, on what they were going to do when they first met aliens, et cetera, et cetera. So to pretend that they didn't know anything about it is a bit ludicrous. They've always known about it, or somebody has. What they've done is brush it under the carpet because they didn't want to disclose to the public that they were involving with extraterrestrials. And to the best of my knowledge, having been updated reading Dr. Sala's reports more recently, the Germans, since the time of World War II, have actually been involving with these extraterrestrials and their UFOs or UAPs, whatever they are calling them now. So this is not something new. This is old, old history.
Oh, okay. And you are absolutely right because you have lived most of that history. I mean, you go back in terms of thousands and thousands and thousands of years, but to the average man and woman on the streets of America or anywhere in the world, the governments of those countries have not brought people abreast of that information. Can we say that's true?
That's true. All the governments worldwide have kept it secret.
Why?
Well, their excuse is people will panic. That's all. That's across the board in any language. That is the excuse. Well, people will panic, as if people are stupid, and people are not stupid, right? It's not about people panicking. It's about, this is a big secret. When you start interacting with extraterrestrials and the possibilities business-wise of making money or advancing military prowess and increasing your power base, the potential for that when involving with these extraterrestrials is huge because of the technology that they have. And so the fewer the people that know about it, the richer those people will get. And as you know, huge, huge money by a very few people has been made in the last 30, 40, 50 years in the military-industrial complex through the technology. All these techno-rich people, like, you know, my favorite worst person, Bill Gates, look at the money they've made out of technology. And this technology has essentially come and been coming to the human species for thousands of years. This is not a new thing. It's been going on always. Ever since there was a civilization of humans on the planet, they have been getting technology from extraterrestrials. And some of those extraterrestrials have not had our best interests at heart. So the government, when they made agreements with these beings to say, yes, we want your technology, what do you want in exchange? Because clearly the US dollar is not much good on Mars, right? So when they say, what do you want in exchange? Almost every extraterrestrial up to recent times has said, what we want is the permission of the government to take some of your people and either use them or as slave labor or experiment with them or do whatever we want to do with them. And the governments have turned a blind eye to these massive abductions. I'm not talking about the two or three abductional families that are traditionally abducted generation to generation. I'm talking about the thousands of people who've been taken off this planet, just people who've gone missing. I believe in any one year it's around 50, 60,000 people. And these are being frequently, not always, but frequently, let's say half the time, they are being taken to be used either by the Third Reich, by the Germans, in their underground facilities in Antarctica, where they're building massive reserves of weaponry and extraterrestrial space travel equipment and ships, or taken off the planet completely and used elsewhere in the universe, and possibly even sold out, according to some of the new material that's being printed out now, especially the Dr. Sala books, which are very well documented. They're being sold off. They're being sold off to other species throughout the universe for various reasons. So this is not new. And it's like everything else, when there is secrecy, no transparency, and crookery going on, it's always the same story. Follow the money. In this case, on this planet Earth, money is power. And the people who are in power are the people who control the wealth of our world. Just less than 2 or 3% of the entire population control virtually all the wealth on the planet. One family in particular actually controls 4% of all business on this planet. So it's not because they think people will panic. Not really. That's their excuse. Their real reason is less people that know, less people to share the profits, and less people who need to be made to approve of their nefarious behavior. That's what I think about it.
Okay. Well, they said that black budget, that budget that's not being discussed, that's above top secret, that, as you indicated, there are dozens and dozens and probably hundreds of billions of dollars that have gone through that program, and it disappeared. Nobody can find it. It's just – so what do you think, besides being in the hands of the cabal or the Illuminati or the – whomever, where do you think all that money is in these days and time? Who has it?
Oh, I would say a few hundred families are extremely wealthy. In fact, a man called John Coleman years ago wrote a little book that George published for him, and it was called The Committee of 300. And that little book, probably you can still get it from Global, right? That little book spells out a list of names of these 300 families who essentially control everything worldwide. This is not, they control the planet. It's not just in the US or in Europe. It's the whole planet is controlled by these very, very few families. I mean, you think of it, your average person knows 400 people at least. Any normal person knows quite well at least 400 people. So you imagine if you know 400 people, then that's how many people control the world that you live on. It's amazing.
I see. It's amazing, yeah. Well, I guess
and we all know, yeah. Yeah, go on, sorry.
No, good. We all know what were you going to say?
I was going to say, we all know, you know, the most obvious families, don't we? The, you know, the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and the J.P. Morgans and the Clintons and the George Soros and Bill Gates, these families. The Queen of England, of course, is right in there with them, one of the wealthiest people in the world. They control the planet.
Well, that was obvious in terms of... It was very interesting, even today, to discuss a couple of years ago, that they said, there's a virus among us. Go home, everybody go in, put the mask on, and don't come out anymore until we tell you. How do you shut the planet down? We talked about that the other day. I mean, do you think they would be able to do it again?
Oh, absolutely. How many people are still going for shots and boosters for COVID? Now they're out saying, Omicron is it, the latest one. It's running wild. The numbers are going up again. Go and get your booster. They've come out with a whole new advertising campaign for Omicron, I see, right? And they're not promoting Dr. Fauci so much. I was going to say Faustus because he's like Faustus, sold his soul to the devil, I should think. But that Fauci, they're not promoting him so much since... a group in Europe have actually taken him to court, to the European court, for harming humanity with his COVID nonsense. But people are absolutely convinced. And now, of course, they're even more convinced because now all the ones that had the shots are getting sick. They're just dying. A friend of mine here in town had two of his friends, relatively young, I mean, 50-ish, in their early 50s, healthy people, both died within 2 weeks. They just die. No, and nobody's saying what they die of. They say, they die. People are starting to die off now as a result of these shots. So when they start to keep getting sick now, then they go back for more boosters and more boosters. There are people now who have had as many as 4 boosters. Well, that's ridiculous.
See.
Well, you know, you have to admit if you need to do it 4 times, it doesn't work.
I see. Well, maybe they want you to get a booster every week from now on. But here's the deal. Look, the World Health Organization declared just a couple of days ago, and this is July 24th, 2022. It says the World Health Organization has declared the monkeypox is a public health emergency of international concern, and it's a global.
Oh.
They talk about, so now we got a new one now. So what are we going to do?
It'll be the same thing. They'll come out magically with another vaccine that takes care of the monkeypox. It's also interesting that about 2 weeks ago, they came out with a statement that said, I don't think it was the World Health, I think it was the British Medical and National Health Service in Britain came out with a statement saying that they have decided, based on their research, that you're 17% less likely to catch something from somebody else, shedding, in other words. It's 17% less dangerous than they thought it was. Well, now, a year ago, they were saying shedding, catching it off somebody else who'd had a jab is absolute nonsense and it doesn't work, although any medical profession truly knows that it does, right? But now this thing that wasn't true and didn't work is now recognized as being 17% less serious than they thought it was. It's like, what a load of nonsense. It's one anybody who starts reading from the beginning and follows it through sees it's just one lie. It's like a giant scam, one thing stacked on top of another. And I have dear friends who are still going out insisting on getting their shots and their boosters. And now, of course, these all these shots and boosters and things where they don't even know what they're putting into their bodies seems to me, and this is just a personal observation, but it seems to me that it is affecting their wits, that they are not as mentally sharp as they used to be. And now it's getting easier and easier to control them, to tell them what to do. They seem to be getting less capable of thinking for themselves, and that's sad. The whole thing's very sad.
So we have been dumbed down and controlled. Listen.
Yeah.
But was it then done years and years ago in terms of the information that's coming forth to this planet? Well, watch this. William Tompkins, you know Tompkins, the brilliant young Navy officer. Okay.
Yeah.
And he said that he established, well, anyway, he says the Nazi Germany had established secret development programs of spacecraft in Antarctica. He said all of that. But he also said that the information that, and he started back in 1942 in this program, you know, with them, with the people who kept it secret, like Colonel Corso and all the rest of them. But listen to what he says.
People all over this planet for at least 6,000 years have been influenced by extraterrestrials, the Dracos and the Reptilians. They have taken the information that is in essentially every school on the planet, and they've modified the information. All history documentation in this country and on every country on the planet have been given lies about astronomy, lies about mathematics, lies about technical capabilities, lies about the universe, you name it, okay? Everything have been lies. Every PhD on this planet, whether they're scientific, whether they're medical, makes no difference. Every book that they read the 6 years they were in the university are lies. They're not telling the truth. They were not taught the truth. At that time, we had 34 admirals in the Navy. All of them had been through Annapolis. They learned how to learn everything about the Navy, everything about history, everything about mathematics, everything about astronomy, you name it. They learned all lies. So who did the Secretary of Navy Forrestal select for this job? Turns out Admiral Riccobata was not an American. He was born in Australia. The Secretary of the Navy selected an Australian man who had not been infected with the lies that the reptilians had taught us. He was freer of that. So the Secretary of the Navy was aware of this because he had been contacted by Nordic extraterrestrials, people here trying to help the United States. Okay? Very important point. So, when I was selected, I hadn't been to the universities. I hadn't gotten the bad information. I hadn't been given the wrong information. And this is the reason I was selected, because I was knowledgeable of the Navy. I was knowledgeable what the threats were. But I hadn't gone to the university and picked up all the lies.
Yeah, he was selected by a group of aliens back in 1942 to work with him and to develop whatever. So what do you, if we say that Germany worked with the reptilians back in the day, back in the 30s. But the other part of the world got the wrong information in terms of the academic portion of what we should be studying and know, astronomy, et cetera, et cetera. What do you think about that statement by him?
Well, obviously I agree with him that almost everything that we are taught historically is inaccurate, right? Yes, it's lies. Everything that the government puts out there is based on a series of fundamental lies. And all our sciences, but that's worldwide. That's not just in America. That's everywhere. There are fundamental flaws in our science and in the things that we are taught, and certainly in anything that relates to history. We are taught nothing but lies. So I think what he was saying was a tiny bit extreme, but I would not disagree with him in principle. Yeah, the educational system is based one lie on top of another because it's tells a story that required to control people, and that has gone on forever. And it's not just gone on by the extraterrestrials. One of the biggest lie tellers on the planet that has affected humanity for at least the last 2,000 years are the leaders of our churches, because they base their teachings on their stories and called them Christianity, which itself is a fundamental lie. So the very things that are supposed to teach us right from wrong and the difference between truth and light and lies are the very people who are responsible for that. So yes, education has always had all forms of education, both religious and secular, has always been based on fundamental untruths and misconceptions and sometimes downright lies. And one of the latest, of course, is the medical profession, which for the last many years in America, right now this is an American thing, has been financed. I believe 80% of all medical schools in the United States at this time are fully funded by the pharmaceutical corporations. Therefore, the only medicine that medical students are taught is allopathic medicine. So that in itself, by just the omission, it's the lies of omission, because they know that certain other things will help patients, but they don't tell them. If it's not produced by a pharmaceutical company, it's no good. And so this is lies of omission, which are absolute lies, just the same as any other. And I would agree with Tompkins in general. Everything is based on lies.
Okay. Coy Good, you know, David Wilcox, obviously, both of them worked together for a lot of years. They were in contact with William Tompkins throughout his life. He just passed a year or so ago. But here's a comment.
Corey, how do you feel about that? That's a pretty bold cowboy statement that Tompkins just made here.
It was common knowledge in the programs. They would talk quite often about how the physics models that we're using down here on the planet are incorrect, and they have not been corrected on purpose. They use different hyperdimensional mathematics models than what are used down here. You know, the physics models, you know, we're still on this quantum and, you know, classical physics model.
Sure.
While, you know, they are deeply into this electroplasmic universe model of physics, which is the true model. Mm. And another thing he mentioned was that they wanted people that had not been, I guess, corrupted by this incorrect education. That is very common in the programs. That's why they were taking children in, because we were not front-loaded yet on different religious ideas, social programming. A lot of that hadn't occurred yet, so they had basically a blank slate to work with.
It is interesting, isn't it, the government studies that have shown that if they did disclosure, the two groups that would be the most hard hit by it would be religious people and scientists.
Yep, the academics.
So they would be really challenged. Go ahead.
Just what I'm saying. That the worst people for lying are the religions, and the most mistaken people are science. Yeah, and that's absolutely true. And it's so much common sense here, apart from anything else. It's so obvious. Everything that we know in mathematics and science is based on measurements taken from this planet. And you and I have spoken about this before. As soon as you get off the planet, you have a whole different dynamic. So it's a different kind of physics. It's a different set of laws that apply. It's a whole different set of basic measuring of anything that you get off the planet. So that's partly why everything they learn here is incorrect. And it's true, they have not corrected it.
Wow. So what do you see for the future then, in terms of the schools are not going to voluntarily change? I mean, what they teach in the curriculums at many universities all over this planet, they're not going to change and talk about the information that you know, that you've been exposed to. So what's the answer, if I may?
Well, I guess the answer is that when it comes to, you know, this is the same, when push comes to shove, something has to change. And there will come a time when it has to change. But so long as we have people, everyday people on this planet, billions of them, all living out their entire lives in their own little bubble, and that what they learn in school or college, universities, their degrees, serve the needs of that bubble, why would they change? They don't need to. If I have a cake recipe in England that tells me I need 6 ingredients in these measurements and that makes my cake, and then I come to America and I find the ingredients are different, but I still can make my cake the way I know how to do it, why would I change? I wouldn't. I just ignore the new things and carry on with the same old way. So that's why it keeps going for so long. Because as a general rule, people, all of us, although everything is constantly changing, we do not like change. We like stability in our lives. We like the same thing. We like routines and habits. We like to know when we turn the key in the car, the car will start. We like to know that when we press the remote, our favorite TV program will come on. We like this kind of stability. We don't want it to be changed. And so the government could come out and declare tomorrow, well, we have all this information that we've been gathering. We haven't told you about it yet because we've been gathering it to work it out and see how it will best serve you. But we have all this new information about mathematics. And so we're going to change the school curriculum and we're going to teach a new way with mathematics. Well, the mothers are going to be up in arms because the mothers are not going to understand what the kids are learning. So the people will resist that kind of change. Most people don't want change. They want it left the way it is. The only thing they want changing, most people, is advances in medicine.
Right.
I've never been anywhere in the world where people were so obsessed with their health as they are in America. Half your television adverts are from pills and medicines and reasons to go to the doctor. And I don't understand that, because Americans have the most wealth of anybody in the world. They have the most access to all good foods and anything they could want from anywhere. Nowhere in the world do you have as much as you have in America to maintain a healthy, fit body just by eating and exercising properly. And yet everybody's obsessed with taking pills and going to the doctors. And you don't see this, not in any other country ever, is there the obsession with personal health that there is here.
Well,
that's another big brainwashing. We're brainwashed.
You think it's because of the commercials, the big farm? Big farm is pushing.
Yes, I do. Yeah. How many adverts do you see on the television where it shows you? The one that got me when I first came to America was a thing called Claritin, right? And it was something new, some new drug. And there was this big advert with lovely music and people dancing about in a field of flowers in the sunshine. And then the name came on, Claritin. Go to your doctor to see if this is good for you. It didn't even tell you what it was for, right?
I see.
So you were supposed to run to your doctor and say, do I need Claritin? Do I need Claritin? And you had no idea what it was for, right?
But,
and a lot of the adverts are like that. They don't tell you what they're for, or they tell you the side effects in teeny tiny words. There's this obsession with taking new pills.
I don't understand.
I've never understood that.
But you, as a nurse, you've seen that. You've been in hospitals. I mean, you've worked with doctors, right?
But I have not worked in America. I never did nursing in America. I nursed overseas, and I nursed in the UK. I'm a UK-registered nurse. And even the patients in hospital didn't get as many pills as your average person here seems to get.
Okay.
I mean, even healthy people take a lot of pills for various things that they think they might need, just in case they need them. You know, I'll take it in case I need it.
speaking of need.
It's sad. It's sad, really, that
But it's not going to change anytime soon. It won't change anytime
soon. No, because people don't want it to change. That's what I'm saying. They don't want change.
Okay.
They wouldn't be happy if the government told them, we now understand that everything we've been teaching you is wrong, so we're going to change it all. They wouldn't be happy with that.
No. They'd be up in arms. Speaking of being up in arms, the lot of information that you talked about, the books, you know, The New Paradigm and all those books happen to be on the website, www.nohoax.net. So George Green's books and some of the stuff that you in the books that you have written, you know, Return of the Anunnaki and all those other ones, and the other one, ETA, it's on that website. Again, that's www.nohoax.net. Now, we talked about George Green just on the last show, and you were talking about he was talking about the camps, the FEMA camps, the concentration camps, if you will, that he was charged to do. And I just pulled it up in his words so that people could hear.
In the meeting, as we're talking about it, we come back to, as you said, the population problem that we have. And in the meeting, what they wanted to do was reduce the world's population down to, as the extraterrestrials said, the Pleiadians themselves said, the planet was originally engineered for 500 million people. Well, that was the meeting. They were talking about the same thing, that they wanted to reduce the world's population down to 500 million. Now, how did it come personally to me? They asked me to build an enemy prisoner of war camp in downtown Las Vegas. Who's the enemy? So we started talking about it, and the discussion is, the planet, and remember, we have a lifespan that's changed drastically over the last 100 years, you know, around the 1900s when there was the population was down, what we call manageable at that time. We're at 8.3 billion on the planet today. In 1900, we only had 2 billion. Can you imagine how we're increasing the population? At any rate, when they asked me to build that enemy prisoner of war camp, my buddy happened to be the Ted Gunderson, the former head of the FBI for Southern California. Anyway, Ted took the contract, come back, and he says, they changed the name. It's no longer enemy prisoner of war camp. It's called FEMA. That's the Federal Emergency Management Agency. And they're building them all over the United States. And that's to get ready for their population reduction. Anybody over age 44 is to be eliminated unless you have a talent that they have. and they only want to have, their estimate, we'll be lucky to have 20 million Americans left alive.
Okay. So you're right. I just pulled that out, you know, some of the things that he was saying. They couldn't cooperate, which you were talking about last time. So how do we address this fact that eugenics is going to be the movement of the day? Can we say that?
And that's Dr. Fauci. That's Dr. Fauci's specialty is eugenics. That's what he's been working with his whole medical life, is eugenics, following on the German program from the 1920s that was, you know, Goebbels and those people were doing right up through World War II. So this is still continuing, and the work that's been done on things like COVID, the weaponization of these kind of viruses or bacteria, is done in conjunction with the research on eugenics. Let's be clear about that. You know, call a spade a spade. It's all part of the government's programming, which is related to what George was talking about, global depopulation, reducing the number of people actually alive on this planet, and selective breeding. Eugenics is about selective breeding. That's what Hitler was all about, was selective breeding. It's very, very evil, and goes absolutely against the whole policy of respect for all life and respect for all varieties and diversities in life, because Hitler had a very specific plan, and that's what has followed on with the eugenics movement, and that's what Dr. Fauci has been working with his whole working life. That's been his career. He is a eugenics career specialist. So he is in charge of our program of what shots we put into our body. So you might question how that all fits together and what it is exactly doing to you. It might be worth thinking about.
How do you see that's going to play out, say, in the next 3, 4, 5 years? Now, we're talking about something that's coming that you think, especially in August, whatever you think that's going to happen.
I think that in August, my understanding, my information is that there are major changes being brought about that will affect the whole planet during the month of August this year. My sense with regard to this depopulation program is that when it comes to all the vaccines and vaccinations and things that people are getting, that there are components of that which are selectively choosing people, if you like, and which may well be. Now, I know this sounds like a conspiracy theory, and indeed, I think it is a conspiracy of government, not some odd group of people, but a conspiracy of government to follow through on what was discussed by government in George's hearing when he was still alive, to reduce population, and that this is one of the methods they chose, because they told him, they said in his hearing, that they would use biologicals or all means necessary. Those were their words, all means necessary. Well, here we have all these shots which are biological, and I think some of them are designed to affect people, either to reduce their breeding capability, to sterilize them so they can't reproduce, so that you get attrition, you get death by attrition, and to create a die-off of people that have possibly underlying weaknesses, like, you know, weak kidneys or weak pancreas, where there's a weakness in the body, those people will be affected. They will have organ failure and they will die. And my clairvoyant perception of that is, and has been from day one, that those injections and what they carry with them are designed to act as far as a secondary factor of reducing population over a 10-year period. So from 2020 through to 2030, this is the decade in which the governments worldwide will be participating in this program to reduce global population. The comment that George made about the planet being engineered for 500 million and that this is what the Pleiadians told him, right? I have no idea, I have no doubt that he was repeating what they told him, but I have thought from day one that there was a misunderstanding there. I think that it was originally engineered for 500 million Homo sapiens to be developed and put on the planet or be living on the planet, meaning that what was constructed in the way of civilized facilities, development of towns, cities, roads, habitations, that was what was designed for 500 million people at that time specifically. I don't think that it was ever saying that there could only be 500 million people living on this planet, because that has never been my understanding in my dealings with off-planetary information or as a clairvoyant. My understanding is that it's just a matter of how we want to organize the resources on the planet, not that they are limited in availability.
Right, but the other question, here's a statement by George. I think this is about George. I was looking for it that may clarify some of that.
At the meeting, Ted Kennedy was there. He was sitting next to me. Ted, he says, George, you're really good with money. We're going to send you out to all the state, meetings to raise money for the party, and you're going to have a real good time. Well, I had taken my daughter so they could go skiing. One of the daughters looked just like you, frankly. Anyway, Ted looks at her and he says, wow, she come walking in the room. And he says, I want to go to bed with that. And I said, no, you don't, Ted. That's my daughter and she's 14. And his response was, I don't care. I was mad. So I got up. I didn't say another word to Ted. I walked across the room. I'm with Pierre Trudeau and his wife, Pierre, the Prime Minister of Canada. Pierre and I were doing okay, but then I'm looking down at his wife. There's a little cigar box, a little half cigar box full of white powder.
You mean cocaine?
I mean cocaine. I'm sitting there and I said, I don't know. This was on a Friday and this is a 4-day weekend because I was supposed to be in on the meetings. And my ego was on the ground. I mean, I was with Bill Levitt the previous week. You don't know who he is, but that's Levittown, New York and Levittown, Pennsylvania. Bill Levitt. We're discussing building cities. I was getting ready to do a $100 million project back at that time. Anyway, I said, my ego's on the line because I'm sitting here playing with that. And then over the meeting, they discuss what they have planned for the United States, get World War III started. Again, the copy of the contract that I had, I printed it in one of my books even, so people could see the contract and read it for themselves, so they want to reduce the population. It's incredible what they want to do, but this is a worldwide deal. Well, I end up, because of the connections that all of a sudden started appearing to me from the extraterrestrials that on, I said, we have a chance to stop all of this if you and I can waken everybody on this planet so we can get them to rethink about this story. But everybody has been so programmed, somebody else is going to save them. It's a program. Nobody's going to save them.
So we have to save ourselves, right?
Yes, we absolutely do. That's 100% correct. Earth humans have to stand up and say, this is our planet and we don't need the help of any of you, so get out of here. Really. We really need to stand up for ourselves and claim our own planet for ourselves and decide for ourselves what rules and regulations we want. Unfortunately, there has been so much brainwashing and conditioning, people seem to have lost the will to think for themselves. It's easier to let the government tell you what to do. It's easier to let the government make the rules, even if they are totally unreasonable rules. Just think of all the rules and regulations that are on the books today that you have to abide by. Laws that have been made that make no sense whatsoever. and you have to abide by them, whether you like it or not, because somebody in some other location that probably thousands of miles from where you live has decided that this is how you need to live your life.
All right.
One that always gets me, and I don't understand it, and I do hold it responsible, is the seatbelt law. I think that, you know, if you're in an accident, in a car accident, and you don't have your seatbelt on, the only person who's going to suffer from that is you, right? Nobody else is going to have any different result from the accident except you. And yet it is the law that you wear your seatbelt. In most states, I think now, it's the law. And if you don't wear it, they will fine you. How is this reasonable?
Okay.
It's not reasonable. And so people have allowed, with these small, that seems like a trivial little thing, but we have allowed these small things to be added and added and added. Rules that tell us where we can cross the street. You can stand there like an idiot with not a vehicle in sight waiting for a little flashing man to tell you you're allowed to cross the road. And if you cross the road when the little light's not flashing, you can be fined, right? These kind of thousands and thousands of little laws, and why do they get away with bringing them all in? Because they tell you they are keeping you safe. And this is the problem, that people have been so conditioned, especially in the West, in the Western world, so conditioned to want the government to keep them safe, that
all
they
right.
want every possibility of risk taking out of their lives. Well, first, that's not possible. You can never remove every risk. But secondly, what it has done is open the door for a floodgate of rules and regulations that now control us, all of us, from the cradle to the grave, taken away all our freedoms step by step by step. And they've done it because we have asked them to. And that's why aliens can now come in. Now it's not even our own government, because our own governments are now in cahoots for their own advancement with aliens. And so these aliens are now sending and telling our government how they have to run the planet, how they run our lives. I'm not going to have a bunch of reptilians telling me how I'm going to live. And I wish everybody would stand up. But if we can't stand up to one of our own, like Dr. Fauci, for instance, and say, I'm not going to wear a mask because a mask does absolutely nothing, even if I believe in the vaccine, which I don't, but even if I did, this masking business of hiding people's faces is absolute nonsense. A virus is so tiny, it can shoot through any mask you're wearing. So a mask is a complete waste of time. That, and we go along with it. The whole world went along with it. Agrees to the, what else are we going to agree to? So don't be surprised when the aliens arrive and start telling you what to do, because you've allowed this. You've allowed somebody else to tell you what to do on all levels of your life.
Uh-huh.
And for two reasons. One, you want protecting, and two, you don't want to take responsibility for yourself.
Right, okay. Here's a big subject then. Okay, since we're talking about rules, regulations, and people protecting themselves. Right now, it would seem that gun violence is a big, big, big deal on planet Earth, especially in the United States. When we go back 50 years ago, no, maybe 100 years ago, the turn of the century, 1900, I'm coming in, 1901, 1902, there were about seven countries that had laws against gun violence, and now there are only three, United States and I believe Colombia and Mexico, saying you can't have a firearm unless you pass our laws, rules, and regulations. But if you have people, let me do this. Let me play this, and you tell me what you think about this.
Gun violence, a topic that's deeply divisive in America, a country where guns are embedded in everyday life.
As of 2018, it was estimated that there are approximately 400 million civilian-owned guns in America. That means there are more guns than there are people or cars in the U.S. By comparison, Americans own more guns per capita than any other country, accounting for about 40% of the world's total gun ownership. And that number is likely to increase. Since 2008, the U.S. firearm industry's worth grew 232%, making it a $63.5 billion industry in 2020. But the reason for division over gun ownership isn't just because the U.S. owns the most guns. It's because it also has the highest rate of mass shootings, gun-related homicides, and firearm suicides among similarly developed nations.
Our politics is just not being incentivized to pay attention to the things that would actually reduce gun violence.
And when you look at the support of keeping it the way it is, the NRA is spending millions and millions and millions, at least $5 million a year, maybe more, especially during the elections.
The NRA spends between $2 to $5 million annually lobbying for gun rights. And during the 2020 elections alone, the association spent $29 million in political campaigns.
And we believe in freedom and liberty and the right to keep and bear arms.
We're talking about issues that people are following, rules and regulations, be it a seatbelt, be it put the mask on. How would you, now this seems to be one that's really out of hand. What would you suggest? How would you advise?
Well, I would say one thing loud and clear, right? Absolutely. The only reason that nobody has never invaded America in a war, and the one thing that would prevent them from doing so in the future, is the fact that America has a 200 million civilian army of armed people. You take away all our guns and it won't be 5 minutes before somebody's trying to invade us. Trust me on that. That is true, right? The other thing I would say is that I have a gun. Almost everybody I know has guns because I live in a hunting state. I don't hunt, and there are rules I would make and I would like to see made. I would like to ban sport hunting so that hunting is when you need to eat the meat, which is true for the most people in Montana hunt because they want the meat. They wouldn't be able to afford the meat in winter. So hunting for food, hunting for pelts and for skins, fine. Flying out from New York with a ton of money in a private airplane just for the pleasure of killing things, no. I don't like to see that, and I would like to see that absolutely banned. But having said that, that's somebody else's decision, not mine. All I know is that if we don't have guns, we are in danger. We should be able to keep our guns for protection. We are going to see more of these violent gun crimes in the future because of what's happening in the planet generally on the frequency level and with all these strange things they're getting into their bodies through the environment and every other way, and that is causing more violent behavior of the kind of brainwashing they get off television and video games, which is also causing more violent behavior among mentally susceptible people. The reality is that it is criminals who kill people with guns. When most of this stuff comes from people who are either mentally unsuitable, so or who are criminals to start with, and that is probably less than a quarter of a percent or a tenth of a percent of the entire population. So I don't think you can criminalize the entire population of the United States by saying you have guns, therefore you're criminals, because you're not. It's a very small percentage, despite the fact that there has been an increase in numbers. And I think that we need to look at what causes those increase in numbers. The obvious criminals are criminals. They're bad people who have guns who go out and shoot people. But the other things that are happening that are of a criminal nature, like the mass shootings and so on. These are coming from mentally deranged people. This is not normal, nor is it normal criminal behavior, right? It's abnormal mental behavior. So I guess rather than just take away the guns, we have to look at the state of mental care in this country in general. Let's examine the causes, because a gun of itself does nothing. It's what the gun owner does with it that matters.
Okay. All right. We talked about a few days ago the book Saving Jesus. And
yes,
in that book, let's talk about what's the essence of that book is, because I was listening to this guy named Paul Wallace, a best-selling author and Anglican church scholar, talked about that he has written. Let him talk. Listen.
Well, good day, Michael. Thanks so much for having me on your show. Yes, it was a transition that would certainly have surprised a lot of people who'd read my previous books, which were all nice books about Christian spirituality and mysticism. And as you rightly say, that's where my career had been for 33 years in church-based ministry. I was a theological educator, training pastors. I was a church doctor, working as an intentional interim, a troubleshooter, archdeacon for the Anglican Church. And it all sounds very orthodox and mainstream. But those who knew me well knew that lurking in the back of my brain were some other questions which had been sown way back when I was about 11 years old, when I read Eric von Daniken's magnum opus, Chariots of the Gods. And I felt that he had accurately put his finger on some gaps in our abilities to explain ourselves as an intelligent, conscious species at the zenith of planet Earth. And as a young boy, I found that the religious answers to that question were a little unsatisfying, and the scientific answers to the questions had some gaps in it as well. So I felt there were some really legitimate questions about whether or not we're alone in the cosmos, and whether or not human development had happened without any kind of external intervention. So these were questions in my mind from the time I was a boy. And then you'll remember in about 2009, the Vatican, under the leadership of Pope Benedict XVI, the most conservative pope in my lifetime, shocked everybody by convening the calling on the Pontifical Academy of Sciences to convene a five-day colloquium to discuss the theological implications of contact with other civilizations. And when I found out they were doing this, I could have fallen off my chair, because it was only four centuries ago the same institution was burning people alive for merely suggesting there might be intelligent life on other planets, let alone us being in contact with them, let alone the language they were using at the time, which was of embracing a brother or sister alien. And there were significant senior spokespeople for the Curia coming out and saying that's exactly what we needed to do. And one of them, the senior astronomer for the Vatican Observatory, came out and said we shouldn't be surprised to encounter extraterrestrial species because they're in the Bible, he said. They're in the Old Testament and the New Testament. And when he said that, he was really throwing down a gauntlet to scholars, theologians all around the world to go back to the Bible and ask the question, are there other entities referenced in these texts that today we would call ETs? And for about a decade, I was sitting there knowing this gauntlet had been thrown down, interested to see how the other churches would respond to this challenge. And in the end, I felt I needed to respond to the challenge. I preached through the book of Genesis in a church I was working for in Victoria. And it was just so obvious to me preaching through it that there's this other layer of story that we preachers tend never to get to. The layer is obvious because of the anomalies in the stories we usually tell from out of the Bible. And I thought, I really have to give time to this, to sit down go through these anomalies, work on them. I discovered they were translation anomalies. And once I tackled them that way and got back to some root meanings of some key words, that I realized the ET layer of the story in the Bible is from start to finish.
And when you talk about Sitchin's, he falls right into that. Could you clear that up for us?
What, Sitchin? Are you talking about Sitchin or about what the man was just saying? He's just telling the truth. He's finally coming out. Here is somebody who is obviously well-educated, huge academic background, very knowledgeable man in the field, you know, and he is finally coming out with good credibility and saying, yes, there is more to this story. Yes, this is in the Bible, and there are extraterrestrials in the Bible. This is, you and I talked about this before when we talked about the book of Genesis, and I told you it was an ancient story, the story of the beginning, was in the Sumerian Enuma Elish, the volumes of the Enuma Elish, and it's repeated in the book of Genesis. And of course, Yahweh and Jehovah, the gods, the Elohim, who walk in the Garden of Eden and talk among themselves. They are heard talking. This is all what the Bible tells you. Well, where did these people come from? They are extraterrestrials. And this is right through the Bible. All the stories. Jacob sees the angelic beings, the birdmen, coming up and down the ladder from their spaceship down to Earth and back up again. Enoch gets taken off and sees the wheels within wheels. The prophets tell about these things. It's right through the Bible. There is no hiding it. It's just refusal to see what's in front of you. And again, we go back to this thing of conditioning. People are programmed not to see what is there. They're programmed to only believe what somebody else tells them. So now people like Zachariah Sitchin, who is absolutely writing translated materials that are available for any scholar to read on the planet today. And as the material is still here, the source material is still here, the biblical scholars that are working on new modern interpretations and understandings of the Bible, you just have to open your mind. This is the time in human history when the truth of many, many things, governments, religions, sciences, medicines, the truths are coming out. Hundreds of thousands of people all over the planet who are well accredited, absolute right to speak out on their subject matter, know what they're talking about. They're not like me just waffling on. That's clairvoyance, right? These are educated people who are well-versed and credibly trained in their history, their own personal history. Their background is such that they have the academic right to speak on these matters, and they are bringing out the truth every which way you look. The people you talked about, like Corey Good or Tompkins, or the people who are written about in Dr. Sala's books with their experiences with the space program, these people have actually had the experience. When George was telling his story about meeting in Aspen with the Kennedys and George Soros was there, and these are true experiences that people have had. It is truth coming out. And if we want to change our world and we want to take hold of our own salvation and make things right for ourselves, we need to listen to these truth tellers and be willing to open our minds to this truth, because it's the first time in human history that it's ever been told, that people are coming out and acknowledging everything you know is a lie. This piece of new information, this is true. And so it's there for everybody. And this is the great time in history for it. It started in the 1990s, and it's going to continue to the end of this cycle, day after day after day. And the more it opens up with truth. It's a story, you know, when you hang out a lantern, you get a lot of bugs flying into the light, right? And they darken it. Well, all this truth coming out, what you're going to see on what is known as mainstream media, their lies are going to get more intense, more focused on brainwashing you, and they're bigger and bigger lies that they're going to tell, because they must be all panicking by now, because their daily lies on news broadcasts all over the world in mainstream media are going to be discredited at an increasing rate as this next 2, 3, 4 years goes along and we move through the change and into the next cycle. Then they are going to have their lies discredited. So their lies are going to get bigger and more aggressive because they're trying to hang on to their lies. And so we will see this at all levels and coming from all people. This man, you said his name was Dr. Wallace. Was that his
name?
Yes.
W-A-L-L-I-S.
Do you have
Paul.
Paul Wallace.
Yes.
Yes, I want to remember that because I would like to get hold of some of his books and read them. He sounds
definitely.
A very interesting man, and
he's
I would love to read something that he's written. Yeah. And I've never read anything of his. I know I haven't. And I was raised an Anglican, so I will understand what he's talking about,
I
think.
I see. That makes sense.
So that will be very exciting for me. Mm.
Absolutely.
He sounded brilliant.
And I think that George Green says it best when he says these few words.
You know, don't look for anybody out here to save you other than yourself. You know, even Christ said that. He said, what I do, you can do and greater, and what you sow, you shall reap.
Stephen Greer with Project Disclosure, he's been out there for about 30 years. What do you think about it?
Yes.
How do you think that's going to end up? 30 years out there. He was a physician, ER, in charge of the ER unit. He quit, left, and he's been out on the stump for the last 30 years trying to get this information that most of us don't know anything about and don't even believe it when we hear it.
That we've all been lied to. Stephen Greer is a wonderful man, and I know he was George knew him quite well, I think. They used to talk on the phone every now and then. I think he's done a wonderful job. And, you know, my hat's off to all these wonderful people who have. This has gone on for that long. I remember the end of World War II, as far back as the 60s, right? I can remember talking about this stuff back then to friends of mine who thought, in fact, I remember when I was in high school, when I was 14 in high school, I was in trouble all the time in the scripture classes because I was innocent then. I thought everybody was a clairvoyant. I didn't know everybody didn't have continuing consciousness as I've had, and I didn't know everybody wasn't clairvoyant. So we used to have scripture classes in high school in England in those days, and the teacher would be telling us things, maybe telling us something from the psalm, and you know, and say, well, King David, when he was with Solomon, this he wrote, and I would say, no, that's not correct. That's not the way it happened. Right?
The one thing I do know
about is what happened in lots of parts of the biblical times because I was around when they were happening. So, you know, I know pretty well what I'm talking about on those subjects. And I was always in trouble. So I remember from my earliest years that whenever I would open my mouth, I was saying, no, this is not really the way it is. No, this is not correct. No, this is. So, of course, I was never the most popular person that one could know. And I certainly was in trouble as a child frequently for not towing the line, for arguing. For that's the only word I can say. I would disagree with almost everything I was told because it's true. We are told a lot of wrong things. We are not told the truth and we're not taught the truth in schools. So I was frequently in the bad books as a youngster.
I guess so.
That's a lot of years ago. That's in the 1950s, 40s, right?
Okay.
And so gone on all my lifetime. There have been people around the world in all walks of life with a lot of knowledge or a little knowledge, like me, right? But who have known in some way that what they were being told or what their friends were being told was not correct. And they've been trying to say, no, think again, this is a lie, this is a lie. And we've all been under that blanket of lies our whole lives. I mean, what am I? I'm in my 80s now, and my whole life has been under a blanket of lies.
Wow.
No doubt about it. The reason for wars, why we go to war, why we fight wars, it's like what's going on in the Ukraine right now. This is the most up-to-date, and it's not working out exactly as planned. Have you noticed that for a while there, every single day, every time you picked up a newspaper or turned on something on the television, whatever it was all Ukraine, 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 Ukraine. Well, recently, that's quieted. Now they're not quite saying quite so much about it. And why? Because the whistleblowers have been going out there and saying, wait a minute, you know, what about the 26 weapons, secret biological weapons laboratories that were in the Ukraine? What about, or whatever number it was. It was almost half the world's total. It was half the total number of American biological laboratories were in the Ukraine, and that people like Bill Gates had big ownership in various things that were going on in the Ukraine, and Hunter Biden was very, very heavily involved with the stuff that was going on in the Ukraine. And these things have started coming out because Russia went in and said, I'm not having this going on my border and leaking over into my border. If you're not going to stop it, I'll stop it. Nobody stopped it, so he jumped in and said, okay, I'm going to bomb the heck out of you until you do stop it. And I'm going to bomb every single one of these laboratories and get rid of them all. And that's what he's done. Whether he was right to do it or not is irrelevant. That's what actually happened. That's what he was going after in the first place. So we have used that as, and we've told another lot of lies, right, to cover up the reasons behind why we were going to war, what we were doing, and why we were funding this war, and why we were sending all these things. Nobody tells the truth. But the truth has got a nasty habit of eventually coming to light. And what's happening today with all the high-speed technology and smartphones and things out there, more and more truth at grassroots level all the way up to the top of whistleblowers is coming out on every level. I don't think it would be possible at this point in human history, for instance, for something like World War II to happen in the way it did, because nobody would stand for it. And we saw the beginnings of this with Vietnam. We can go back to Vietnam when thousands of young Americans fled to Canada and various other places, so they didn't get sent to Vietnam. Now, they got a bad rap for it. But actually, these are people who we should be honoring because they were individuals who stood up and said, no, the government's feeding us a whole load of rubbish. We don't believe that this is true. We don't believe that this is true, and we're not going to participate in it. These were not cowards. These were heroes who did that because they stood against a lying government. And nobody ever told the truth about Vietnam. The only person I ever heard the truth was, and I was nursing in Indonesia at the time, and I knew a Vietnamese doctor. And he said, the French went to war in Vietnam and they couldn't work anything out. Now the Americans are there and they won't ever work anything out. He said, what they're not taking into account is that the Hill Tribes, who at that time were known as the communist group, the Hill Tribes had been coming down and raiding the lowland tribes where all the rice grew for over 4,000 years. It had been a permanent highland-lowland fight among the Vietnamese themselves for 4,000 years. And he said that it will never truly be resolved. And of course, it never really has been. So things of why people go to and do terrible things like go to war or major, major catastrophic events for humanity, I don't think average people any longer will be willing to do it. I don't think. But what they are getting ready to do is stand up for themselves. And I think that's what's going to happen here in America. If we don't see major changes very soon, then the people will have had enough, and they will stand up against it and say, no more. We're not having it. We're not having you crazy people out of, you know, the power money group and the people supposedly representing us in Washington. We're not going to listen to you anymore. We're going to close the doors on the lot of you and go our own way.
Okay.
I don't think they'll stand for it much longer.
Well, I think that I believe that in the next 10, 20, 30 years that it would be a lot of things that will be uncovered, disclosed, if you will. I'm holding in my hand Kennedy's Last Stand, the title of the book by Dr. Michael Sella, S-A-L-L-A. I suggest that people get it because it talks about Eisenhower, UFOs, MJ-12, and even the JFK assassination. Of that, in the final analysis, the few years he was in office, that he had demanded the information, the truth that was being hidden from him by the people who were called MJ-12, the people who were above top secret.
And no official of my administration, whether his rank is high or low, civilian or military, should interpret my words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, to cover up our mistakes, or to withhold from the press and the public the facts they deserve to know. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned. No rumor is printed. No secret is revealed. No president should fear public scrutiny of his program. For from that scrutiny comes understanding. And from that understanding comes support or opposition. And both are necessary. This administration intends to be candid about its errors. For as a wise man once said, an error doesn't become a mistake until you refuse to correct it. We intend to accept full responsibility for our errors, and we expect you to point them out when we miss them. Without debate, without criticism, no administration and no country can succeed, and no republic can survive. And that is why our press was protected by the First Amendment.
And I say that in the book, Kennedy's Last Stand by Michael Seller, he's saying that MJ-12, the CIA, under the guidance and direction of Dulles, had him killed. So that's the price he paid for stepping up. Do you understand that?
Yes. That's speech he made, that particular speech, I think that as a speech it is important to the American people as the Constitution was when they made the speech about the Bill of Rights and so on and so forth, right? Back 200 years ago. That speech of Kennedy's should be also something which is regularly published and put before all the school children and say, this is the kind of values that you need to understand we want from our government, that we don't want our government to be less than this, that we want this level of transparency, because there is no transparency. But the tragedy I find now is that we, first of all, you know, there's the old saying, people get the governments they deserve, right? Well, Look at the kind of government we currently have. The whole government, I'm not saying one side or another, the whole government, it is corrupt. It has dozens of ill-educated, unintelligent people who make ludicrous statements, who have no experience in life, no experience in government, and they're running the country. And we have people in charge who are questionable in their level of mental competence and whose whole families are unbelievably corrupt, and that these corruptions have been proven to be there, to be true and widespread, and that no action is taken against them. So we really have got a government that we deserve. And what does that say for us as a voting public, if this is what we deserve? We're clearly not thinking about anything of importance with regard to the management of our lives if we choose to elect people like this, if we choose to elect people without checking into their history and their background and their capability and their connections. And where a big question that we never seem to ask is, where do they get their money? You know, I've said this before. It always absolutely stunned me that Hillary Clinton, for one, was out there when she was last running for office, was out there saying that she'd been in public service so many years, that she'd only ever worked in public service, which was true. She'd only ever had a government job either as an elected official of some kind since she worked for the Rose Law Firm in her youth. And yet somehow she had amassed enough money to buy 5 multimillion dollar homes. On a government salary? I don't think so. So where did that money come from? And I think that's what we need to ask them all. I know you and I don't necessarily agree about Donald Trump, right? And I'm not saying that man was a saint by any means. But at least he got his money through business. He made the money before he ever went into politics. He didn't get it through corrupt dealings while he was in politics, acting as a politician and a public servant. And that's one of the reasons why I would strongly support, for instance, things like fixed terms of office, saying you cannot make a life career out of robbing the public and living off the taxpayer, because that's what most of the politicians in Washington do. They either live off the public or they're corrupt and get money through some back door or other by some pork schemes that they manage to take percentages off in some way. Our government is as corrupt as any government in the world that I have ever seen or read about. And we are so sanctimonious, we criticize other governments in third world countries and things. We're just as bad. We are just as bad. And that's one thing I will say. I don't currently agree with the politics of our one of our president senators from Montana. I don't agree with his politics. But I can say this about him, that he has a thriving ranching business here in Montana, and he doesn't need the government's money. So at least, though I don't agree with his politics, I do trust him to behave with some honor. But I think that's what is sadly, sadly lacking across the board in American politics, is There is no sense of honor anymore. So there is no integrity.
You need to talk about term limits, huh, for all offices,
yes.
Congress and Senate. Yeah,
yes.
Right. I understand. Well, don't they do that?
I would definitely support that.
Okay. All right. Coming to the end of the discussion for the day in many respects, except that disclosure seems to be on the doorstep of America in terms of this UFO alien collaboration, if you
yeah.
will, that goes back many, many years. And the Pentagon thing, let me do this, and then you can respond to this in closing. But Pentagon.
Because it looks slightly different, we're not willing to actually look at the problem in the face. We're happy to just ignore the fact that these are out there watching us every day.
The government has ignored it, at least publicly, since closing its Project Blue Book investigation in 1969. But that began to change after an incident off Southern California in 2004, which was documented by radar, by camera, and four naval aviators. We spoke to two of them, David Fravor, a graduate of the Top Gun Naval Flight School and commander of the F-18 squadron on the USS Nimitz, and flying at his wing, Lieutenant Alex Dietrich, who has never spoken publicly about the encounter.
I never wanted to be on national TV. No offense.
So why are you doing this?
Because I was in a government aircraft, because I was on the clock. And so I feel a responsibility to share what I can, and it is unclassified.
It was November 2004, and the USS Nimitz Carrier Strike Group was training about 100 miles southwest of San Diego. For a week, the advanced new radar on a nearby ship, the USS Princeton, had detected what operators called multiple anomalous aerial vehicles over the horizon, descending 80,000 feet in less than a second. On November 14th, Fravor and Dietrich, each with a weapons system officer in the back seat, were diverted to investigate. They found an area of roiling whitewater the size of a 737 in an otherwise calm blue sea.
So as we're looking at this, her backseater says, "Hey, Skipper, do you?" And about that got out, I said, "Dude, do you see that thing down there?" And we saw this little white tic-tac-looking object, and it's just kind of moving above the whitewater area.
As Dietrich circled above, Fravor went in for a closer look.
Sort of spiraling down?
Yep. The tic-tac's still pointing north-south. It goes, and just turns abruptly and starts mirroring me. So as I'm coming down, it starts coming up.
So it's mimicking your moves.
Yeah, it was aware we were there.
He said it was about the size of his F-18, with no markings, no wings, no exhaust plumes.
I'll see how close I can get. So I go like this, and it's climbing still. And when it gets right in front of me, it just disappears.
Disappears.
Like gone.
It had sped off.
What are you thinking?
So your mind tries to make sense of it. I'm going to categorize this as maybe a helicopter or maybe a drone. And when it disappeared, I mean, it was just...
Did your backseaters see this too?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There was four of us in the airplanes literally watching this thing for roughly about 5 minutes.
Seconds later, the Princeton reacquired the target, 60 miles away. Another crew managed to briefly lock onto it with a targeting camera before it zipped off again.
You know, I think that over beers, we've sort of said, "Hey, man, if I saw this solo, I don't know that I would have come back and said anything because it sounds so crazy when I say it."
You understand that reaction?
I do. I've had some people tell me, you know, when you say that, you can sound crazy. And I'll be honest, I'm not a UFO guy.
But from what I hear you guys saying, there's something.
Yes.
Oh, there's definitely something that, I don't know who's building it, who's got the technology, who's got the brains, but there's something out there that was better than our airplane.
Well, this was on 60 Minutes, so it's a big deal in terms of the information that they were discussing. Never before, even on Project Blue Book or Project Grudge or even Operation High Jump or Go, no one has come to the fore in this way to talk about the UFO and what's out there. So does that give you cause for excitement that this may be coming to the head?
Well, I do think the most likely thing that is coming in August, although I don't 100% sure, is that there will be these massive disclosures about the extraterrestrials and their presence on the planet. And it's great that they are doing these shows that you're telling me was on 60 Minutes or whatever, that they're coming out with this. But don't let it fool you. They're letting it out now, not because the government hasn't known about it. They've always known about it. They just haven't told anybody. It's a deception to say never before have we heard of such a thing. Of course they've heard of it. We have, according to Dr. Sala and his very well-documented book, Histories of Antarctica, we actually have two fleets of spacecraft operating militarily in space. One
right.
run by the people from the Pentagon and the Army, and one run by U.S. Navy intelligence forces, the U.S. Navy Space Force. And so we're actually out there doing this stuff with our own spaceships. So, of course, we know about everything that's coming here. And we are not surprised that they're out there watching us. We know all about that. We're interacting with them. The Germans are actually in business, actual literal business dealings in space with the reptilian species. So it's just that everybody's hidden it for so long, and now they can't hide it any longer. And I really think this is what August, the whole thing for August will be about, is these disclosures and introductions of these extraterrestrial beings, et cetera, et cetera. And I do think that at the forefront of this, they may well be the Pleiadians stepping forward and making themselves known and their claims. And
okay.
I would just like to know what their agenda is. What
I
do
see.
They want?
Maybe they will disclose that.
All the extraterrestrials want something. They all
right.
want something. We need, again, let's not be brainwashed. You know, I used to always say, don't get on the first spaceship you see. Find out who's driving first. Well, now I'm saying, don't welcome the first extraterrestrials that come with a sweetness and light story of, we are here to help humanity. First say, what do you want in return for that help? Because they all want something.
Well,
that's
briefly,
why they do business with the governments of the world.
But you had some, if we go back 40, 50 years, maybe even more, in your lifetime, you had some awakening, if you will, dealing with the Palladians. What was that about, if you don't mind?
With the Pleiadians?
Yes.
What was that? What did I tell you about that?
I'm not sure that
I know what you told me.
That you were involved with them at some level, and that you were kind of deceived or led astray. How's that? No.
Oh. That was when I was in at late teens, when I was 19 through 20 years of age. It was not the Pleiadians, it was the Greys. And they were doing experimentation on abductees. And at the time, I was actually an auxiliary nurse. It was before I did my full training, and I was an auxiliary nurse working in the OR at my local hospital. But at night, the Greys would come and take me out and have me working in one of their hospitals with these patients that they were working on. And I believed at the time that I was doing something helpful. I believed that I was doing a good thing with these patients. I didn't realize that the Greys were not doing a good thing at all, that they were doing illegal. Let's say they were doing illegal things. They were doing unapproved work on these humans. And for 2 years, I would go two or three nights a week out of body and work all night on that frequency level with these people. And it was 2 years before I realized what I got myself into, and I had to get out of it. So Yes, the extraterrestrials can, all of them can be very deceptive and very manipulative, because we are easily manipulated. We are, as Earth humans, we run on our five senses. We are very emotional beings, and every one of the extraterrestrial species has the capability of manipulating our emotional base. They can all do that. And so we need to be very self-aware and really question our feelings and where they are coming from. When we start having this open contact and are consciously presented with the extraterrestrials and their, whatever they're saying, listen to what is behind the words, listen to what is behind the communication, what is behind their offer of help, what is it that they really want. They say they want to help humanity. Well, maybe they do, maybe they don't. They say they want humans to join the great galactic brotherhood of humans throughout the cosmos. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. Keep an open mind. Don't be ready to fall for everything they tell you, because let me tell you this, they're all fighting among themselves out in space. They're not all, they might be highly evolved technologically. They might even be, some of them, highly evolved spiritually. But they still fight among themselves in space. They're not all on the same side. There are multiple factions amongst them in space. It's not just one team of highly evolved and advanced beings. They are more technologically advanced than Earth humans, and that's how they are able to come here when we apparently are not able to go there where they are. That is true. But it's maybe only technological advancement and not spiritual advancement. And maybe they tell you a great spiritually advanced story of sweetness and light, no different to the religious stories that you get here. Think about that, that maybe their story is just as big a lie to control you as the stories that you're told here. Many of the spiritual stories that we are told on this planet through our own religions are not all the truth by any manner of means. So we really do need to question even the ones that we know. And I certainly have never had any problem arguing with the ones that I know, standing up and questioning them. Mm-hmm. Question everything.
All right. Here's my point. Since most human beings, I'm saying 80%, 90%, they don't even know what telepathy is. Can't even spell it. They can't do remote viewing. How do we discern the truth about with whom we meet? Listen to this. Here's a lady who is she's channeling with a guy, and I was just listening to her, but this is a few seconds. She's saying what's on the other side as he channels William Tompkins.
So the way I understand it is, they will, the beings that still want to dominate will take those that we're not ready to break out, that are not understanding that they needed to expand their consciousness. So they will go into like another dimension, stay within like a lower dimension. Those that are ready, they have this wisdom that they know that there are beings that are taking over consciousness and are able to break free, they move on to a higher dimension and can incarnate into higher frequencies.
Okay. Now
yeah.
What?
She's talking about when people die.
Okay.
She's talking about when somebody dies.
Oh, I see.
That
okay.
Those, and that it's actually quite simple. It's a bit of a complicated process, but it is quite simple. When you have lessons to learn from a planet, and the lessons you happen to be learning are planet Earth, then you are spiritually attached to the core of this planet. And when you die, that attachment remains. You simply go into the astral plane and you wait for another body. And it's like being attached to the piece of elastic. It springs you back to Earth each time you come back to Earth. However, if you are, as the lady put it, ready to expand your consciousness or have expanded it, then you don't need the lessons of planet Earth anymore. So you kind of unhook from Earth when you die, and you're then free to go and have experiences on other levels, other frequencies, other planetary systems, in or out of the physical plane. It's not complicated. It's a simple process.
I see. So since you've been in and out of this existence for thousands, thousands of years on numerous times, what are you going to do this time when you leave? Are you coming back? Are you going to Andromeda? Are you going to Mars? What are you going to do?
Well, what I have contracted to do is to come back to this planet for 300 or 400 years to help with the cleanup crew. You know, as a registered nurse, I'm well qualified to clean toilets, and the Earth is getting a bit like a rather grubby public toilet in the state it's in environmentally now. So there will be major cleanup going on the planet for a long time to come. And so apparently I have already agreed to do that. I will not be doing it in an Earth human body. I'll be coming up and down to the planet. That I have been promised. But what I'm actually hoping to do in addition to or after that time, go back to school. When I first came to this planet, I'd just become qualified as a medical technician. And then I'm hoping to go back to school so that I can one day be the ship's doctor. I live primarily on board a ship. That's been my home for a very, very long time. And I've been on and off this planet multiple times. But I will simply go back home to my own ship.
Okay. Okay. And you will help drain the swamp. I hear you.
That's right. Only I will, you know, I'm not a person who's qualified for any high-powered job. Mine will be one of the most menial tasks you can think of. I'm not qualified for anything else. So, you know, I'll probably be one of the ones who's cleaning out the ditches or something.
I see. Well, listen, thank you very much for being with us. You've covered an array of subjects, and we all need information. The thing that fascinates me is that as we talk about this and other people respond, you were saying that 90% of the people have not been abducted, right? And
right.
Another 90% of the people are not contactees. Could you?
Right.
Why? And the people who have been,
well,
what percentage of the people you think on the planet, like Billy Myers, like George Green, what percentage of people on this planet do you think have been contacted or contactees?
Maybe 2 or 3% maximum.
How many?
I would say maybe 2 or 3%.
2 or 3%. How about abduction? Same thing. 2 or 3% have been abducted.
I doubt if it's that many. I would say a quarter of 1% have been abducted.
So that's a very select group then, like Mac, like Travis Walton and all those people. Like, so isn't that something? So
those people are chosen. They're taking somebody off the planet, physically taking them, abducting them, and taking them off the planet onto a ship, or picking them up and transporting them to one of the underground bases like Dulce, which is the place that they had me going and working at night. This is high technology to do it, very costly. It's not a cheap thing to do, Plus, it's damaging to the physical bodies that they take. That I know I've been gone on and off the planet many times, especially when I was, you know, when I say younger, I mean, you know, in my 40s and 30s, 40s, 50s, those years. I went several times back on board the ship where that I know, right, where I go. But to go physically, and this is before they built the International Space Station, which made it much better. But before that, to actually physically go on board and then be brought back again, you would have bruises and bangs all over your body. It is very trying on the physical body to be transported on and off the planet like that. It's not an easy thing on this biological form. You get pretty beaten up doing it. It became much improved after they built the International Space Station, because although, of course, they don't realize it on the space station, the extraterrestrials did use it to transport people out of body, to take them out of body to the space station and then pull them off the space station into real space. It became like a stepping stone onto the ships, and that did make things a lot easier. But that applied to doing it out of body, not in body. So, there's very few people actually are abducted and taken off the planet. Most of the abductions are just picked up and taken to somewhere like the, as I say, the underground bases like Dulce, that are all over. Those underground bases are all over the planet. Mm-hmm. And they just, basically, it's just a flight, a quick trip. But it's still hard on the physical body because the speed at which they fly, we're not used to it.
All right. So as Corey Good and David Wilcox says, it's ongoing and people.
Those people like Corey Good and those people, they are not abductees. They are people who worked for the extraterrestrials or for the government in conjunction with the extraterrestrials. They're contactees.
Or contactees. So they may be with the extraterrestrials in terms of helping to.
Right. They actually work with them, either with the government that's working with the extraterrestrials or with the extraterrestrials themselves.
That's like William Tompkins. But George Green haven't said he was contacted by the Pleiades.
Yes, he was.
Yes.
But except that the people who actually contacted him were not real Pleiadians. They said they worked with the Pleiadians and they pretended to be Pleiadians themselves used Pleiadian names, but they're actually German.
Oh, did you think they were with my labs?
I don't know about that. I know that they were with the Germans. The one calling herself Semyasi was actually, her name is Maria Orsic. There's a photograph of her in Dr. Sala's books. And she worked for the German Vril Society before and during World War II. And half the members of the German Vril Society were Nazis, members of the Nazi Party, although she claimed she never was and that she didn't. She did work directly for Hitler.
Okay. Well, maybe that was Project
Paperclip.
That's
what I'm saying about. Yeah, and now she's with the Pleiadians under Antarctica, working with a whole group down there of Germans. That's what I'm saying and they're Pleiadians. Make sure you find out what they want.
How do you make that discernment? How do you determine if we were contacted?
Well, first you make sure what your values are, and then if you are true to yourself, to your own soul self, and you acknowledge what is the truth for you, then you can see how somebody else's representations resonate with your truth. For example, let me just say this. If you believe in a diverse society, if you are not a racist, if you have no color bars whatsoever, right, then you might want to look at the fact that the Pleiadians, also known by many people as the Nordics, are an entirely white race. They have no color, and they are all exactly the same. You might want to keep that in mind when you ask, so all their spirituality, when you look at their idea of spirituality, see it against the backcloth of their history, their race, their way of living, and measure that against the history of Earth people on this planet. Because although many people on this planet have come from other parts of the universe, in reality, this planet now, Earth itself, is a multiracial human society. Everybody who is here has a right to be here. Everybody who is here is an Earth human being. No matter what color, what shape their eyes, what color their skin, what language they speak, we are all Earth human. We are all equal with one another. So measure the standards of extraterrestrials against their racial history and how they view racial diversity, and look at what they teach spiritually and see how that resonates with what you as an individual believe, what your truth is. Don't just swallow their truth because they've been clever enough to build a spaceship and hide themselves under Antarctica plotting who knows what for thousands of years and influencing the government secretly behind closed doors. When you deal with extraterrestrials, you have to think of all these things.
Right.
Why, if they were so good and true, why didn't they just step forward themselves openly and ask to be acknowledged, ask to be recognized?
Okay.
Because it's not true that we kill them instantly. We don't.
Right.
Only control.
Okay. Thank you for being on, and we'll see you next time. Thank you, and have a good day. Thank you for the information you've shared with us. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and always remember, these are just my opinions. We all have to find our own.
Of course.
Question everything. God bless everybody, including
all right, God
me.
Bless
we
you.
All need okay. it at the moment.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye, Russell. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye now. Have a good
bye-bye.
One. Thank you. Thank you for being on. Thank you.